Good morning. Thank you all for coming, and I'd like to thank the delegation from the Republican People's Party, CHP, Jim Red Health Party, for coming to CSIS again. They were last here before the elections, so they were kind enough to agree to come here to do a post-election review of the Turkish economy, the Turkish political scene, and foreign policy. There's going to be a PowerPoint presentation by our first speaker, so I won't take too long. We will begin with the Deputy Chairman for Economic Affairs at the RPP, Mr. Faik Öztrak, a Member of Parliament from Tekirdağ, and then we will continue with the Deputy Chairman for Foreign Affairs, retired Ambassador Faruk Loğlu, who many of you know was here. And then we'll invite the other two members of the delegation after his presentation for their brief comments, perhaps more on the Turkish political scene, Gülsem Bilgehan and Umut Orhan. And hopefully we'll have plenty of time for questions and answers. I'm sure many of you will have some questions. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guests, and let's proceed. Mr. Öztrak.
As I have to use the micro and the keyboard together, so I will not stand up, but I'll try to make my presentation from here. Good morning, everybody. I will try to explain what's happening in the Turkish economy, our view about the Turkish economy. Well, we are now witnessing a sovereign debt crisis in Europe. Everybody's aware of that. And from our perspective, that this is also a political crisis because of the inability of European governments to take the necessary decisions, as they have the elections for the main countries approaching. And when we look to the debt, sovereign debt of Europe, a major portion, a high portion of that debt is held by Italy. That's why problems in Italy are very important to trigger and has the potential to trigger a debt crisis in Europe. And there's no doubt that Turkish economy will be affected severely of what's happening in And again, although the major developed countries has used most of the ammunition in the form of monetary relaxation and fiscal relaxation, the growth is not resuming. So this is a big problem which has a negative impact on debt dynamics also. And the growth, the expected growth rates in the future for the developed countries, who are also our who includes also our main markets, namely Europe, are expected to not recover sharply. And the trade volume is the growth rate of the trade volume is going down, and especially the Eurozone imports for 2012. 2013 and 14 are less than what we had in 2011. So there will be a slowdown also in the growth of imports in Europe in the coming 3 years. Well, and there are also lots of evaluations about Turkey saying that the performance of the Turkish economy is Turkey did well during the last 10 years, and we have very recently witnessed this by the vice president's speech in Turkey, and he said that Turkey's economy has tripled its GDP over the last 10 years, and per capita income has remarkably increased. Now family living standards are much better. Well, is it so? First, let me start with that. With that one. Yes, the nominal GDP has tripled. But when you look to the real GDP, we don't see the same story. So, and if we compare the Turkish performance with other emerging market countries, we didn't perform as well as the average of emerging and developing economies. Okay, we are a bit better than Central and Eastern Europe, but we are not as good as in terms of growth performance with other emerging and developing economies. What is behind? First of all, there was an insufficient policy mix. And again, there was a lack to undertake the necessary structural reforms to deal with the structural problems. Now we have a high unemployment rate, creating social tension and frustration among especially young people. The youth unemployment is around 20%, which is one of the highest, which is considerably higher than the OECD average. We have a widening income inequality. And we have unsustainable current account deficit, and inflation is soaring now. So, and we had, for example, last month, although the rating agencies has upgraded, for example, Brazil, one of the emerging market countries, which downgraded the Turkish economy by reducing the outlook from positive to stable. Well, there's a perception that we are doing well, but if we make the comparison with other emerging market countries, then the outcome is not as bright as the rhetoric. We have an unemployment which is still about 10% on a yearly average basis. And although there was a high growth rate, it doesn't create the necessary employment. And among 25 emerging economies, Turkey had the ninth highest unemployment rate in 2002 and the fourth highest in 2007 and 2011. So, in terms of unemployment, compared with our peers, we did worse. We are not better than them. Again, now, although the unemployment figures returned to pre-crisis level, the job creation was mainly in agriculture and services sector. So the increase of employment in agriculture shows that people who lost their hopes to find a job in cities, they return back to the rural areas. And when they come near to their land and look to their land for 1 hour, and if they said that I went to my land and to work there, they are considered as employed. That's why agriculture played a major role. Although the share of agriculture in value added is declining, the share of labor in agriculture in labor was increasing. Well, if we look to the development indices, according to the UNDP Human Development Report ranking, Turkey ranked 18th among 153 countries in 2011. In 2011, our rank was 92nd among 187 countries. So there is no improvement in terms of Human Development Index. A latest OECD report, which looks to the developments in income inequality in countries, shows that we are ranking third in terms of income inequality among OECD countries, and the richest 10% in Turkey earn 14 times more than the poorest 10%. One
one, yeah. Sorry about Gideon, nasıl gidiyor? And in terms of external deficit, the performance of the Turkish economy was really bad. When you rank the country according to their current account deficit as a ratio of GDP, in 2002 we were 14th, in 2007 sixth, and now we are second. So there is a worsening compared, radical worsening compared with our peers, and now we are expecting a current account deficit which is equal to 10% of GDP, and there will be a debt repayment which is over 130 billion. It's written 110-25, but according to the central bank figures, in the coming 12 months Turkey has to pay some $130 billion dollar debt, plus a current account deficit which is expected to be around $70 billion, means that next year we need $200 billion to raise from the global markets in order to refinance our debt plus finance our current account deficit. And it will be difficult to raise this amount of money, especially from European market, as we are expecting that in Europe there will be a haircut of for the sovereign debt, plus a recapitalization of the banks. So, and this will reduce the amount of finance which can go to Turkey. Now, in the past, we were lucky because before the crisis, there was ample liquidity, which is going to emerging market countries. And just after the crisis, the real economy, especially in developed countries, has shrinked more than the financial side. And there was still ample liquidity on the markets, which came to Turkey. But starting from 2012, the story might be very, very different. And Turkey's deficit in best case scenarios is expected to not drop below 70%. And when you look our deficit for 2011, it's the highest among the Central and Eastern European country groups and developing and emerging market economies. And for 2012 and 2013, IMF, OECD, and medium-term program prepared by the government, a current account deficit, which is equal to, which varies between 6% and 8% of GDP, will be realized during the coming 2 years, which is quite high by Turkey's standards if you compare the situation with the past. And we had the October current account deficit on an annual basis. It's 79 billion. And it is interestingly largely financed by net errors and omissions, which is more or less 20% of the current account deficit. So we don't know the source of these funds which comes to Turkey, and bank debts. Turkey will continue to be the current account deficit champion over the next 3 years. On the other hand, consumer price index inflation is rising now, although there was an expectation of price increase which is equal to 1.22% for November. The realization was 1.7%. And now the annual number is 9.5 48%, which is very close to double-digit numbers. And it is apparent that in December we will have double-digit, we will return back to double-digit inflation rates. And it's not only the headline inflation, but also the core indexes, which are followed by the central banks, also are in the are rising. And there were expectations by the central bank that the economy will slow down and we are going to have a soft landing, but this doesn't materialize during the third quarter of 2011 also. And it appears that this slowdown will not be there even the even in the last quarter, because when you look to the capacity utilization rates that we started to have and industrial production, they are on the rise continuously. And the growth rate, annualized growth rate in the third quarter of the year is 9.5%, which is very high compared with other countries in the world, and we are ranking the second after the China in terms of growth rate. And we would like to be happy with this outcome, but we are worried because of the signs that we are getting from the front of current account and also from the front of inflation, which shows that the economy is overheating and the situation in global markets gives us the impression that the risk of having a hard landing is increasing now. Well, what was the growth? I want to come from there to the structural problems, and the numbers that we are having here shows that in terms of growth, during the second AKP period, we started to lag behind the behind other emerging market countries. We were ninth during 2002-2007 period, but we became 19th in terms of growth between 2007-2011, despite this high growth figures. And again, there was a rhetoric saying that Turkey is now the 17th largest economy of the world, which is not correct, because in 1987, Turkey was the 14th largest economy calculated according to the purchasing power parity numbers. We were 14th. Now, in 2002, we became 17th. Now, we are 16th. If you calculate the gross domestic product with if you take into account the gross domestic product calculated on purchasing power parities. Well, the problem in the Turkish economy is that after the crisis, just after the crisis, we start to observe a very high increase in household indebtedness. And real credit volume in banking sector has increased tremendously between 2010-2011. And again, household debt, which was, for example, 41% in 2009, has increased to 44.7 at 2011 as a share of disposable income, which is very high. So what's happened? The policy of the government was to use, was to close the gap between expectations and incomes by pumping credit, financed mainly by hot money, and the result was considerable widening in current account deficit. So the policy was wrong, and because of the elections, government has used the room for maneuver in order to finance the elections, and we became trapped with a very narrow room for maneuver to the recent crisis. And now there are analyses by reputable international investment banks saying, for example, that Turkey is the second most vulnerable economy following Venezuela. And where they do get to this result, first of all, there is a real loss of competitiveness in the Turkish economy. Export-import coverage ratio is the lowest since 2001 crisis. And despite the high depreciation of the lira, we don't see a sizable recovery in trade deficit. And short-term debt stock has reached, as I said, has exceeded 130 billion, and large part of it, 115 billion of which is held by the private sector, and the rest by the central bank, and around 20 billion is held by central bank and public sector. But if we look to our foreign reserves as a share of current account deficit plus short-term debt, we had the lowest ratio compared with our peers. And this creates risk, this increases the risk perception related to the Turkish economy. And when you look, for example, to our import coverage ratio, we are having a reserve level which covers 5 months of imports, while Brazil has 19 months, China has 23 months, Russia has 23 months, and China has 24 months of reserve coverage of imports. And Turkey's reserves over short-term external debt ratio is also about 4 times worse than Brazil and 8 times worse than China's. As I have mentioned before, we are observing that the overheating in the economy is still continuing. Capacity utilization rate is rising, and industrial production also is rising. And in October, seasonally and calendar-adjusted industrial production increased 4.4% over the previous month, which is the highest recorded during 2011. So we don't see any slowdown in the economy. And the trade deficit widened to $8 billion in October. Although the imports are not, or the rate of increase in import is slowed down, but the rate of increase in exports also is slowing down because of the problems in our, especially in Europe. And the trade deficit, despite lower imports and lower exports, it's increasing. And this shows that this also shows the structural problems related to the Turkey's external sector. Not only this one, but the graphic which I showed before also, the sensitivity of imports to the appreciation of the or depreciation of the currency also shows that there is a need to address structural problems in order to get out of this situation. Inflation, I showed this graphic. Inflation is going up. So current account is going up, inflation is going up, and the current account has reached levels that cannot be financed, that will be very difficult to finance in the coming year, and the risk of a hard landing is increasing. So, and I mentioned the policy mix. When we look to the central bank, we are getting confusing messages from the central bank. They are using reserve requirement ratios. They refrain to use the policy rates, and this gives the impression that they are trying to align with the Prime Minister, who wanted zero interest rates. And this also makes questionable the independence of the central bank. And we had the Turkish lira, which is one of the currencies who recorded the highest depreciation. And we are now in a situation where we need some sort of depreciation to control the current account and trade deficit, but also we need some appreciation in order to calm down the inflationary pressures. So it's getting nowhere, and there is a need on the part of central bank to give clear messages about what he is aiming. Because I remember at the beginning they started to say that they will be targeting inflation plus financial stability. Then at some stage, the governor aligned with the prime minister, and he said growth is more important for them. And then at another stage, they said that they are going to control the current account deficit. This is their priority. And finally, they turned back again to financial stability and inflation targeting. So the messages which is coming from the central bank is confusing. The messages which is coming from the government is also very much confusing. They started to say that just after the elections, they are going to control the inflation. And some of the ministers, Mr. Babacan and the deputy chairman of the AKP, they said that the risks are increasing, so everybody needs to be careful. Don't spend too much. Don't borrow too much. And then 1 week after, the new minister responsible from the economy, he went out and he said, don't do anything. Continue to spend. And then after, the minister responsible from industry came into play and he said the same thing. And the prime minister, he said that this time this crisis will not even be tangent. We will not even pass tangent to the Turkish economy, and so continue to spend. And central bank governor joined him. And then 10 days after, they have increased the prices of utilities and turned back to the people, and they said that if we didn't get those measures, we will be like Greece. So all sorts of confusing messages are coming from economic management team, and this also increases the risk perception of the people and foreign investors related to Turkey. Furthermore, they are also stepping back from the reforms that we have established during 2002. With the decrease in law, for example, they have reduced tremendously the independence of regulators. This was with a decree in law. They have also took the measures to reduce they have also nationalized by a decree in law Istanbul Stock Exchange, which was financed solely by private money. They have managed to get the control of the board of Istanbul Stock Exchange by a decree in law. Now, these are all factors which reduce the pool side of the international capital movements. So pool factors are diminishing, while the risk aversion also in global markets is increasing. At some stage, we may end up with a real hard landing in 2012 if we continue like this without taking any measures. Now, everybody is saying that the budget performance is good, but when you look to the budget performance by making cyclical adjustments and also adjust for the one-time measures, then we are going to see that the fiscal stance is not tight, the fiscal stance is relaxed. So there is a need to further tightening the fiscal stance, but they don't do it. Now, we are saying in global markets that we are the only country who has the ability to make long-term, medium-term programs, despite the uncertainties related to the global economy. But when you look to our medium-term programs, the deviations from targets are very large, and medium-term programs started to lose their function and reliability as an anchor. Now, the most recent medium-term program says that the aim of the fiscal policy is to control the current account deficit. Now, what is current account deficit? Saving investment gap of the public sector plus saving investment gap of the private sector. And the saving investment gap envisaged for 2012 for the public sector is increasing by 0.6% of GDP. So the target and the policy are not the same. The numbers are telling us that next year public sector will have a widening impact on the current account deficit. And when we look to the very recent growth expectations made by the IMF and made by other banks, now they are expecting a growth rate of around 2 to 3%. And even we have investment banks who are expecting zero and negative growth rates also. So the risk of having a hard landing is there, and it's increasing. So we had an economic performance in the past, but we have also overlooked the underlying structural problems. We believe Turkey must focus on a path of economic and financial sustainability while strengthening its open market economy. And we have a strong economic team that follows global and regional developments very closely, constantly devising new strategies and policies to take Turkey to a more sustainable tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. I thought it would be important to focus on the economy first, because you know the underpinnings of the strong support that the ruling party has in Turkey, like that of governments everywhere, is of course the economy. And having just come back from Turkey, I noticed a very lively debate between those, particularly within the government and close to the government, who argue that in fact, the economy is on the right track, that those who are criticizing it are Cassandras, you know, who are engaged in wishful thinking, and those who actually, like you, have been warning that that serious problems are ahead. Now, let's remember that the government, the AK Party, came in after the economic crisis of 2000-2001. And if your analysis is correct, like President Obama in the upcoming elections, then the AK Party may have difficult days ahead. But anyway, we'll get to that in the Q&A. Now, let's proceed very quickly to the foreign affairs picture as seen by Ambassador Lawler.
Thank you. Good morning. And I'm going to do what I'm going to do very quickly because Q&A is always more interesting than what the speakers have to say. Faik Öztrak just said about the economy really sets me up very well for what I'm going to say about Turkish foreign policy. But before I do that, I want to thank Bülent Ali Rıza for hosting this event. CSIS has always been a good host to Turkey and to Turkish affairs. And this is another event in a long series of similar events in the past. It's good to be here. It's good to see all of you. What I have to say about foreign policy, just three basic points. One is performance, the other is promise, and a few words about the Turkish-U.S. relationship at the moment. In terms of performance, despite the claims to the contrary, Turkish foreign policy is going through one of its most problematic phases in the history of our nation. Even in the Cold War years, Turkey's national security was not in such a problematic situation today for various reasons, and the reasons are very clear, but for different reasons. Russia is looking sideways at Turkey, threatening Turkey if this happens or that happens. Iran is taking a similar stance against Turkey. We are at loggerheads at the brink of God knows what with Syria. Our relations with Israel are also extremely tense and problematic. We are threatening action against the Greek Cypriots for drilling in the eastern Mediterranean. And this by a government that claims for itself a policy of no problems, zero problems with its neighbors. So the claims and the reality are very much contradictory. They don't hold together. Is this accidental? No, because I think basically both the basic orientation, the basic direction chosen by the AKP governments in Turkey in recent years have meant Turkey distancing itself from the Euro-Atlantic community of nations, whether it's NATO, the European Union, or the U.S., and moving in a slightly different direction, but mostly in the direction of the Arab world. And this has resulted in wrong choices by the government at critical junctures, like the opening toward Armenia, which in itself was good, but its implementation was so wrong that it backfired. Anyway, in terms of performance, in terms of results obtained, I'm sorry to say Mr. Davutoğlu and the Turkish government do not have much to show for themselves in terms of success. The second point I want to share with you is promise of the Turkish foreign relations matrix, if you like. And let's look at the Arab Spring. And that's the issue that's most debated here and elsewhere in the world today, that Turkey can serve as a model. This implies several things at the same time. One is that what Turkey represents, what the Turkish reality today is something that is relevant, applicable, and should be applied, should be followed by the Arab countries. And some may claim that, well, the country, Arab countries, Arab leaders say this for themselves, that they like the AKP, they like the Turkish model, they want to be like Turkey. I think this is basically just talk, not action. There is not much substance to this, except at the level of rhetoric. And that for the following reason. Turkish model in the abstract, the ideal model, that is Turkey as a democratic secular state, is a model that can, one can perhaps think of applying to Tunisia or to some other country, but not the Turkey of today, with its problems of in the domains of democracy, economy, society, and foreign relations. But the more important thing is that Turkey will probably be increasingly less relevant and less able to control the events in the Arab countries in terms of where the Arab Spring, the future direction of the Arab Spring should be. And this is important because I think when you look at the Syrian situation, the idea is that, well, Bashar Assad should go and whatever comes in place will be managed, controlled by the Syrian people, of course, in the first place, but by a country like Turkey. I'm afraid this is a wrong assumption. I think once Assad does go, and he should, but under what conditions, with what cost, is a different subject. What happens after Assad goes in Syria will not be under the guidance or control or persuasion of Turkey. Every country, every Arab country, will determine for itself what it is going to do, how it is going to do it, based on its particular characteristics of history, political culture, aspirations, and whatever. So when we think of the Arab Spring in terms of post-Qaddafi Libya, post-Mubarak Egypt, post-Bashar Assad Syria, you have to, in this country, in this capital too, you have to really plan for the day after. You cannot expect Turkey to provide the guiding force in this respect. Of course, we would do our best in Turkey as the Republican People's Party and many other Turks to help the Arab countries in their efforts to bring about a better society for themselves. And there is much Turkey can do, even the current government can do, with respect to especially the economic reconstruction of these countries, the strengthening of civil society in these countries. I think in the current situation, Turkey has been taken hostage by this idea of the Turkish model. Finally, on Turkish-U.S. Relations, it is a very warm period in Turkish-American relations, but for a very limited, for a very specific reason, and that's Syria. The policies of the two governments, Washington and Ankara, coincide, overlap, and this gives comfort to Washington. It also gives a sense of being in an excellent relationship with Washington. My point is the Turkish-American relationship needs more than Syria over the long term. It needs more enduring pillars. I think we have to move the Turkish-American relationship from an issue-oriented or issue-specific relationship to a norm, value, principle, and interest-oriented relationship. Not that this is this hasn't been done, not that it's not being thought about at the present moment, but there is so much focus on Syria in both Ankara and in Washington that I think this is at the cost of neglecting the other dimensions of our relationship. We as CHP do want to maintain a sound, solid, enduring relationship with the U.S., calling for cooperation between the two countries over different areas of mutual interest, especially in the Middle East. My last point, and this goes to the first part of my comments, namely performance, Turkey is today no longer part of the Middle East peace process. It's out. Given the state of our relations with Israel, there isn't much room left for Turkey to play any role in the Arab-Israeli conflict. The only place where we can still be very effective is Iraq, but the Turkish government at the moment is not paying as much attention as it should to the situation in Iraq, which remains to be a very critical situation. That's where I'll stop.
Thank you. And now I'd like to invite for their brief comments the other two members of the delegation. I neglected to mention that both are members of the Turkish Grand National Assembly. Ms. Bilgehan, please.
Thank you. So nice to see you again. It is our second visit. We have been here before the elections. And now I would like to share with you some views about the women's rights in Turkey after the elections. I would like to say that we are a little bit disappointed after the elections because we were expecting more parliamentarian, women parliamentarian in the parliament. But the percentage is just 14%. But previously it was 9, so it can be considered as a progress, but of course it's not enough. By the way, here in the States it's 17. You can compare it. The number of women ministers has decreased from 2 to 1. Actually, we have just one woman minister. She's trying her best, so as an opposition party, we want to support her and we want to help her, but she's alone. And they changed the name of her minister. Previously, it was Women and Family Affairs Ministry. Now it's only Family and Social Affairs Ministry. It's normal because the only advice of our prime minister now to women is you have to make 3 children, and that's all. On the other hand, the participation of women into the active labor force is very low. The rate of women participation in the labor force in general is about 25%, and 60% of these women don't have social insurance, and they are mostly unpaid family workers. Generally, considering the data of the World Economic Forum Global Gender Gap Report, Turkey is the 122nd rank among 135 countries on the gender equality, where USA is ranking as 17. Unfortunately, the domestic violence is one of the top issues in the domestic agenda of Turkey the last 10 years. And the cases of violence against women have increased incredibly since the last 10 years. But I have good news, too. Recently, we have voted the Convention of the Council of Europe about the domestic violence, and we are the first parliament to ratify this convention, and it's a good success for Turkey. But we know all that implementation is another thing, and it's always easy to vote some laws, but it's very difficult to implement them. And for the implementation, I think, as the opposition party, CHP, we have to to monitor the fact and to continue to be careful on the women's rights. So that's all for the moment.
Thank you. And Mr. Oran, in your comments, could you just address the overall domestic political picture, if you can, as well?
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank for giving us this opportunity, Mr. Bülent Ali Rıza. And thank you for your participant, for your coming. As my colleagues already explained, we have some threats and we have some opportunity. Of course, from Washington to Ankara, almost 5,400 miles we have away. So you have some perceptions, but there are some reality. Mr. Ustrak tried to explain the reality of the Turkish economy, and Mr. Loğlu tried to explain also our foreign relations. There are very important four columns about our nation stand on. Economy is very, very important. Foreign relation is very important. Security, the third one, is very important. And the democracy is also very important. My party has got the traditional in promoting human rights and democracy. And we are the party that brought free elections, human equality, and the progressive values to the country. And so we have got deep concern in recent situation in human rights issue. I want to little bit explain this. In the area of the freedom of expression, there are now 8 members of parliaments. They are in the jail. One of them is, 2 of them, they are from our party. Total from 3 party, there are 8 members of parliaments. And one of them, he is a journalist also, and he is member of parliament of CHP. And he is in the jail since more than three years. And totally, when we look, there are almost more than 70 journalists. They are under custody. This is the number more than any country in the world. And 500 university students, they are in the jail. Unfortunately. In the last EU progress report, which was issued on 12th of October, this report states all these acts of the government are a threat also to media freedom. Long period of trial systematically diminish the right of fair trial. For example, a university student who uses her right to protest, taken under custody for 19 months and then released. She is still waiting for the final judgment. These are our main concern about of a free democracy. If there is no free speech and if there is no free right of fair trial, any regime can change into an oppressive state. So I want to make it clear, without democracy, there will be no progress, actually, no prosperity and no peace for also to Turkey. I want to say a little bit about some things about for Turkish and U.S. relation also. When we see the Turkish and U.S. relation, I want to say, Mr. Loğlu said very well, it is not, it shouldn't be just depend on issue-based relation. When we look to the economy is very important for all the countries, especially these days because of we have a big world economic crisis. So for your country, for U.S. and for Turkey also is very important. And when we look to the numbers, I can see that the performance of the U.S. And for Turkish government, for Turkish people, for Turkish industries, for Turkish exporter, is not good enough. When I look the import and export numbers on 2002, I can say Turkey exports to United States almost $3.5 billion. in 2002, and import again almost 3.5 billion dollars, which means almost equal export and import. And today we export again the same ratio, $3.5 billion, but we import almost $13.5 billion, which means it's a huge deficit for on behalf of the Turkey. Almost we export one and we import four. So this is very important issue, especially for model partnership. It shouldn't be this much a gap. It should be a win-win situation in the relation trade, foreign trade relation of both countries. Another aspect of relation with the United States is the fight against terrorism. National security is very important for all the world, for United States, and for our country also. We know, all of us, that there is no doubt terrorism is an enemy of democracy and human rights. And all the nation in the globe must fight with this violence together. On that issue, as a strategic partner, ally, Turkey needs more cooperation and assistance from the United States against the PKK. When we see again the performance of the government and the United States last 9 years, we see that we have a big threat on terrorists, and we need much more cooperation, and solidarity from United States for our fight of the terrorism, especially in northern Iraq issue. And we can see this also, according to the Pew Institute, U.S. favorability rating dropped down 52% to 17% between the years 2000 to 2010. So the people, Turkish people, they don't see the win-by-win situation about this model partnership or strategic relationship. So I think United States also should take this into consideration, and also Turkish government also should take into consideration this. In the Turkish and the U.S. relation, I want to say these comments, and I think we have to leave for question and answer to the floor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've got about 20 minutes, maybe 25. I'll start with the first question. Mr. Öztrak, as I said after your presentation, the perceived economic success was such an important component of the electoral success of the current government, both in the last elections as well as in the previous election. You talked about perception versus reality. Now, the reality does, as you presented it, give cause for concern. As I see it, the confusion on the part of the central bank and those that direct the economy may be coming from the fact that they're pursuing too many objectives, which, are, given the liquidity crisis in Europe and the world, may not be sustainable. By which I mean, trying to keep the growth rate up, trying to reduce the current accounts deficit, and of course, trying also. You didn't get into that much. Trying to make sure that the Turkish lira does not fall below the psychologically important two liras to the dollar ratio. And again, one might question whether the central bank ought to be involved in trying to determine what the exchange rate is. My question is this: if what you suggested happens, what would you be your recipe for getting out of the crisis, if indeed it comes? And who knows? Electoral success may actually bring you into government. What alternative measures would you implement if that were to happen?
Well, During my past experience as a bureaucrat, I saw that when you are dealing with crisis, credibility is very important. So we see that central bank must be clear about what they are targeting and what they are trying to achieve. And I think the role of the central bank must be to preserve inflation low and also to ensure the financial stability. These two goals are important, and they have to ensure the financial stability together with the BRSA and other institutions. On the part of the government, by the fiscal policy that they are following, they have concentrated too much on the deficit and primary balances. But when you look to the expenditures, and if you evaluate the expenditures in real terms, taking as a basis 2007, we will see very easily that the expenditures still includes the fiscal stimulus provided during the crisis, despite we have two consecutive years of 9%, and now I think that this year also it will be around 9% growth rates. This was a very good time, the last two years, to have a greater fiscal discipline and control the heating in the economy. But even for 2012, the policy stance that they have adopted does not have the necessary elements to control the current account deficit through controlling the demand, because their savings investment gap is increasing. Now, and during the last 10 to 5, especially during the last 5 years, we are observing some sort of dragging on the part of government to take the necessary structural measures which will increase the competitiveness of the Turkish economy, which will enhance the functioning of the market. Education.
Could I interrupt you for just 1 second? Was that because the government was more interested in ensuring electoral success through the perception of an economy that was doing well, that these decisions were not made?
Well, definitely. And as also said by the Deputy Prime Minister, Mr. Babacan, he said very explicitly that till now the plane was flying at the automatic pilot. Now we are trying to get the plane or to fly the plane by our hands, and they are making mistakes. Now, they got the positive wind coming from global climate behind, but then, you know, and instead of taking further steps to improve the economic conditions within the country, they had several back steps. Public procurement law. They have amended the public procurement law more than 18 times. And it's not towards the improvement of the conditions in public procurement, but it was with the aim of creating enormous rents. So they have created lots of exceptions for the public procurement. And again, I have mentioned, during the final period of the previous parliament, they have issued the right to, they got the right to issue decrees in law. And with those decrees in law, by bypassing the parliament, they have established 11 different ministries. And they put the regulatory bodies who are supposed to be autonomous under the control of ministers. Again, very recently, they have nationalized, as I have said, Istanbul Stock Exchange. Oh, they can say that we did this with the aim of privatizing it, and we will see when they are going to privatize the Istanbul Stock Exchange. And again, when you look to the personnel regime changes that they have realized with this decrease in law, the aim was solely to strengthen their position within the bureaucracy. In one night, several bureaucrats find themselves losing their posts. So I'm mentioning those because this will create in the future more risk aversion on the part of investors related to the Turkish economy. Well, again, I don't want to be very harsh on them, but with their control on the judiciary, they are now threatening even the property rights. If you have businessmen in the opposition who's opposing to the government, they immediately send their inspectors on them to keep them under the control. There is a real self-censorship in the business environment, a real self-censor in the media, which really threatens, as Mr. Orhan has mentioned, the freedoms, human rights, and democracy. Furthermore, they have some sort of overconfidence to themselves, which really creates the perception in foreign investors that they are not aware of where Turkish economy is heading. This is another problem. I have participated with several government officials to different conferences arranged by foreigners, and even I saw them saying to the French people that we are going to teach them how to gear an economy. And they said the same thing to the vice president. And the vice president said that, okay, I accept that the rapidly swimming fishes are important, but don't forget that in the pool there is also a whale, which is U.S., swimming with young sharks. So it is important that they say very openly the weaknesses of the Turkish economy. There's no doubt that Turkish economy is a big economy. We are among the 20 biggest in 1987, and we are among the 20 biggest even now. But I saw during my period in the bureaucracy that if you give the right medicine, the performance can be much better. That's why I'm doing this comparison. Why, for example, we stepped back in terms of growth rate compared with the period 2002-2007? Because they failed to take the necessary measures which increases the competitiveness of the Turkish economy. Thank you.
Thank you. I know Hakan Taşçı, for example, has a different view on the economy. So at any stage, please jump in. But Rafi Denziger has a question.
If I may, two quick questions. Number one, I think there's a wide perception that the current government is an Islamist government. I was wondering if there's a perception that indeed this government is trying to impose some of the Islamic values on the population. And number two, do you believe that Ergenekon was real or just an excuse for the government to throw people in jail?
I said, Lola, would you want to pick this up or
For the government, I can tell that we can feel some Islamic values, yes. We can see there, you know, the role model of Turkish, the role model, the Turkey is a role model. It's true. The Atatürk Republic, which is democratic, secular, social, and law state, is a role model. Today, all these items, we see threats by the regulation of the government. And on the secularism also, we have very doubt about the implementation of the government. Especially also, it's very important, the gender equality. As Ms. Bilgehan also explained about the gender equality situation in Turkey, and there is no progress. And even Mr. Erdogan always says at least 3 children for ladies, and they want to put them in the house. And the participation of the labor force, the women's, is around today 35, very low, very limited. Regarding to Ergenekon, regarding to Oda TV, regarding to Sledgehammer, regarding to Şike neydi İngilizce? Şike. Sorry.
Match fixing.
Match.
Match fixing.
Match fixing. Always we see, we feel, we found some enough proofs, and all the people who protest, who are against to the government, they put in a situation in that case. In Ergenekon, maybe there are some people, they are guilty. We don't know. But we are against the detention period is too long. And the standards of the, let's say, accusation is not good. The standard of the people, how they live in the jail, it's not good. For example, one meat officer, he died in the jail. So we have always doubt about this. And mainly Ergenekon, Sledgehammer, and Oda TV, all of them, all the people, they are a part of the terrorist group. For example, in Ergenekon, I mentioned before, he is our member of parliament from Izmir, Mustafa Balbay, and he is also a very famous journalist. Can you imagine? He writes in Cumhuriyet, very old and respectful newspaper, and before he already gave some very important people died because of the terrorist attack, like Uğur Mumcu, like Ahmet Taner Kışlalı, and this gentleman, he is writing in their column today, and today this newspaper was bombed, and two bombers, they are at the same court with Mustafa Balbay. Can you imagine this? Mustafa Balbay is also a terrorist, and the bomber of Cumhuriyet, they are also terrorist, and they are in the same trial court, and they stay in the same jail. So, you know, we have big question mark about this, and we are lucky. We are glad EU also, Commission and Parliament now, they are very looking this in a dub situation, and they are watching that period. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol.
Can we get a little bit more on this terrorism situation? Traditionally, in Turkey, terrorism and PKK were synonymous, and that's sort of how we understood it. And now under this government, we have all these issues that Mr. Orhan mentioned that are now under the rubric of terrorism. So we don't have a clear definition of how the parties and the government define terrorism in Turkey. And at the moment, that seems to be impeding passage of the terrorism financing law, which traditionally the United States has an interest in governments passing. How does your party look at the issue of terrorism? How would you want the issue of terrorism to be defined? And how do you see overcoming the hurdle to the passage of a terrorism financing law?
You want to pick this up yourself or somebody else?
If I can say some words about the law of about the money laundering and preventing the terrorism, preventing the financing of terrorism, this was promised just before 2 years before, and the only element which talks about terrorism was this law. Within the program of the government. But it's still pending. And our position vis-a-vis the money laundering and the financing of terrorism is deteriorating among OECD countries, among others. Vice President mentioned this. The very recent IMF report is mentioning this, that we need to issue this law, but nothing is happening. It's still within the commissions, and they are not issuing it. We, as CHP, we believe that this law has to be issued as soon as possible, very rapidly, in order to, because we are complaining about terrorism, and we are failing to have the passage of this law from the parliament. They used the right to issue decrees in law to establish 11 ministries, but they didn't use this one on which we have full agreement to issue the law related to the financing of terrorism and money laundering. So this is our position as CHP. We are supporting this law, and we want this law to get out of the parliament as soon as possible. They may tell different stories because they did this, for example, for the civil code in the past, saying that as opposition we are resisting to the passage of the civil code, which was not true. And I'm saying here very openly that we are supporting the passage of this law as soon as possible. Money laundering, preventing money laundering, and the financing of terrorism, in order to have international standards in our country.
I want to add something. We are very very positive and very open to government to cooperate on that issue, but unfortunately the government doesn't cooperate with us and with the parliament. Last time, I think it was 1 month ago, 34 soldiers are 34 soldiers killed by PKK. And we asked from the government to make an urgent priority meeting on that issue, especially on that issue. We made two times. It was both of them, they were closed to the public. None of them, Mr. Erdogan, came. And one of them, he made a meeting with the journalist, owner of the all the media boss and also editor of the media, in order to make autocensure on that news on the terrorism. And he didn't come to the parliament and to discuss this very important issue. And even on when he made this meeting with the media, he made discrimination. He didn't invite four or five, it should be four main media, because of their opposite to government. So, as Mr. Öztrak explained, we are very open, and we are very, this is our very national security and terrorism, it's our very important priority for us. And unfortunately, in the this is the 10th year of the government. And when the parliament opened this time, this year, new parliament, the government program, there wasn't any single sentence. There was no single sentence about how they are going to find a solution on terrorism. There isn't any single sentence. I told that we need much more cooperation from our allies, United States. And I, when I explained about the polls, it was 52. Remember, in 1999, United States helped to Turkey a lot on that time. The head of the PKK, Öcalan, was catched by help of, it was in 1999. And on 2000, 2001, 2002, there wasn't any single terror attack. And after 2002, after this government, after the regulation of the government, and this year, 2011, it is the let's say top year where we have lots of people died because of the terrorism. So government should do, our government should put this into the priority. It is very, very important issue for us. And also U.S., I know how U.S. people and I know U.S. government how sensitive on that issue. I was in the United States in Washington in 11th of September. I can see what you feel. I feel also the same feeling. And we believe we have the same threat and we need much more cooperation from U.S. Fighting against terrorism, especially in the northern Iraq, because we know very well in northern Iraq, United States has so much effect over there. Thank you.
If I could follow up with you, Mr. Loğlu, Mr. Orhan just mentioned that terrorism began again to be a problem for Turkey after the U.S. invasion of Iraq. And one of the reasons Turkey was opposed to the U.S. Attack on Iraq was the fear that this would happen. Now, when we look at the polls, we see that the U.S. still remains very unpopular in Turkey, including among your supporters in the Republican People's Party. There is a perception that the U.S. is simply not doing enough on this issue and that it did nothing against the PKK based in northern Iraq when it was there. How big an issue is this in U.S.-Turkish relations? And do you think that that it could actually be resolved to allow the relationship to flourish in the way that both sides say that they want it to?
It is an important issue in Turkish-American relations because the general perception in Turkey, public perception, is that the U.S. is not doing enough in Turkey's fight against terrorism. And this was exactly the point that was brought to the attention of the U.S. ambassador when in Ankara when he visited Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu a few weeks ago. And the American ambassador replied and said that the American government was in fact doing much more than what was conveyed and reflected in the Turkish press and media. And all this information about the extent, the scope of U.S. Help to Turkey in its fight against terrorism, all the data, all the facts were in the hands of the Turkish government. And all the Turkish government had to do was to share this information with the Turkish public. And on that basis, we, the Republican People's Party, we wrote a letter to the Turkish Foreign Ministry asking this information to be shared at least with us as the main opposition party. That was about 4 weeks ago. We have received no answer from the government. I think part of the reason, despite what the American ambassador says, and I'm sure from his point of view he is telling us the facts as he sees them, and despite this close, warm honeymoon between Washington and Ankara on the Syrian issue, the public perception of the U.S. is extremely low in Turkey. And why is that? And I think part of the reason there is that the Turkish government in the last 10 years has never really taken ownership of this relationship, ownership of the Turkish-American relationship. Why hasn't done that? Why has the Turkish government not done that? For domestic political reasons, because it pays to be anti-US, it pays to be anti-EU, it pays to be anti-Israel in Turkey. It is perhaps not as simple as that, but it is the first and most pertinent explanation for the situation. For it to change, the Turkish government must speak the same language in Turkey to the Turkish public that it speaks here to the administration in Washington.
Thank you. Well, I know there are a lot more questions, but unfortunately it's 22 to the top of the hour, and I know that they have another engagement that they need to go to. So I'd like to thank the CHP delegation for coming to CSIS again, and we look forward to your next visit to us. Thank you.